Hello, and welcome to this British Journal of Surgery podcast. I'm Wendy Barnaby. Today we'll be talking about emergency surgery. That's the subject of an entire issue of the BJS, and it's freely available. You can find it on the website or read it on your iPad through the new BJS app. Our first two speakers are Dr. Barclay Stewart and Dr. Charles Mock, both from the Departments of Surgery and Global Health at the University of Washington in Seattle. They're joined by Professor Kjetil Sarajda at the Department of Gastrointestinal Surgery at the Stavanger University Hospital in Norway. And from neighbouring Sweden, Associate Professor Stefan Acosta, who's a vascular surgeon working at Malmö University Hospital. Barclay, let me start with you. Your paper estimates how many people around the world undergo emergency surgery and what facilities are available to help them. And I must say, it's a pretty scary read. Could you outline your main findings?
First, we found that more than 1 million lives are lost each year around the world from conditions requiring emergency surgery. Most of these, as one would expect, around 70%, are in low and middle-income countries. The most common death, as it has been for decades, remains complicated peptic ulcer disease. Though we did find a significant increase in emergencies from vascular disease, such as aortic aneurysms and critical limb ischemia, that we think are the result of an aging population and the spread of risk factors like tobacco use and obesity. We described the acute abdomen as it has been also appendicitis and bowel obstructions, complicated hernias, and biliary pathology remain the most common causes. However, typhoid perforations and tuberculous peritonitis are common in developing countries. Interestingly, malignant perforations and complicated diverticulitis are becoming quite common, even in low and middle income countries, again, due to aging populations and the Western diet that has taken over the world in many places. But even more importantly, we are ill-equipped to take care of all these emergencies. We estimate that around 50 million major general surgery emergencies are performed annually. And this is obviously quite a human and physical resource to deal with. Most indications are still treated around the world in facilities without oxygen or pulse oximetry, running water, radiography, et cetera. And the availability of surgeons and anesthetists and aseptic theaters still varies markedly by national income. For instance, in the United States, we have about 9 general surgeons per 100,000 persons, compared to 2 per 100,000 in Bangladesh and around 1 or so in many African countries. Lastly, we can be a bit more optimistic. We found numerous exciting and cost-effective results from improvements in surgical capacity. These include training programs for non-physician surgical providers for providing essential surgeries at district-level hospitals for around 24 euros or 33 U.S. dollars, which is similar to the cost of oral rehydration solution. And we also found that the development of the acute care surgery models that improve patient outcomes and reduce the cost of emergency surgery.
Well, that's an optimistic note to end. As I said, a rather scary picture on. Thank you very much indeed, Barclay. Charles, can I turn to you? You're a co-author on this paper. With your extensive knowledge of emergency surgical care in Seattle, can you tell us how you manage it there?
I say across the United States, North America, there's been a shift in the past 10, 20 years to the development of the specialty of acute care surgery. Previously, surgical emergencies were managed by whatever surgeons were on call. Usually this was in between busy elective operative lists during the day or office hours, and led to people being exhausted during the day after their call, led to emergency surgery, including trauma, being regarded as a nuisance. And now it's being increasingly regarded as a specialty in its own right, with career advancement within the field of acute care surgery and with better dedicated resources, like an operating room that's set aside in many bigger hospitals for emergencies rather than patients having to wait until the next available operating room. So I think we've seen a growth of interest in addressing surgical emergencies in their own right.
How do you think the BJS supplement on emergency surgery will improve patient care?
I think I'm hoping it'll lead to increased attention to surgical issues by two groups, the public health community and the surgical community. It's two groups that usually don't have very much to do with each other. The public health community, such as people working in ministries of health in countries around the world, given the burden of surgical issues, both those shown in this paper, emergency surgery, but also conditions that arise that are handled more electively, like most cancer surgery and other types of emergencies like trauma care. there needs to be bigger emphasis on this and the design of health systems and devotion of human resources. And the surgical community also needs to pay better attention to what happens outside the big medical centers, and especially what happens in the community. Many times there are people dying, and a large part of the burden that we found in this paper, it was a mixture of people that were dying after surgery from, you know, they were in very ill condition. But there are also many people who die in low and middle income countries never having had medical care or never having had surgery because of the low level of availability of services. And typically the surgical community has not, it's done a great job in most countries focusing on operative care delivered by surgeons, but the population-based focus of who has access and who's dying without getting access to surgery, that needs to come in much more, have much more attention paid to it.
Thanks, Charles, very much. Now, let's turn to Shetal Sarida. Shetal, you're the editor who's led on the emergency issue. Why is emergency surgery such an important topic?
I think emergency surgery is important because it deals with conditions that are important or actual for patients and surgeons all over the world. There are things you can plan for and things you cannot plan for. And emergency conditions, they tend to come unplanned and for everyone everywhere in the world. So I think this is a very topical theme to focus on for all surgeons around the globe.
What are your personal highlights from the issue?
My personal highlights, it's difficult to pick from the very many good papers. I think on one side, I really like the focus on global surgery and the perspective that we have to deal with in terms of disease burden. On the other side, I think it's very interesting to read about the new technologies that are approaching the clinical arena, such as NOTES surgery. From my personal point of view, I think there are very many papers that are worthwhile reading in this issue.
And people can read it in a new way, can't they? How can people get hold of it?
Yes, this is actually the first fully electronic issue in the BGS, and you can access the issue through regular ways, such as searching up topics in PubMed. You can also go to the website and read the papers full text or in PDF via the BGS website, and we will also distribute information on how to get access to this issue through emails and pamphlets and in congresses.
Shetal, thank you very much indeed. Let me now turn to you, Stefan. I was interested to see in the paper by Drs. Stewart and Mock that when you're thinking about emergency conditions needing surgery, higher income countries have a higher death rate than lower income countries. And they put this down to a higher rate of vascular disease in the higher income countries. Is this your experience too?
Well, my reflection is that in the Western world, there is an increased proportion of elderly people. And as people get elderly, more the frequency and the incidence of vascular diseases are increasing.
Your paper on mesenteric ischemia describes changes in the way that the condition is managed. Could you give me a quick summary of those?
Well, with modern radiology and computed tomography, we are now able to see the occlusion of the superior mesenteric artery and much faster diagnose this condition and then be able to go ahead with proper surgery. And that is open surgery and it's endovascular surgery. And the modern way to treat this condition is to take the patients to a hybrid room where it's possible to both operate and perform endovascular therapy with radiology and to be able to properly treat these patients with a better outcome. And I will also say that in Sweden, the Registry for Vascular Procedures has lately clearly shown an increase of both open and endovascular surgery for acute mesenteric ischemia.
So it sounds as though there's less surgery and more specialization. What about other emergency abdominal vascular conditions like ruptured aortic aneurysm, for example? Is the treatment changing there too?
Yes. In some places in Sweden, in some university hospitals, ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysms are treated with endovascular therapy in the majority of cases. In smaller hospitals, there is still problems with logistics and the availability of trained personnel. On the other hand, there is a declining incidence of abdominal aortic aneurysm in the population. And due to screening, more and more patients are treated with endovascular and elective surgery, so that there is less cases today treated for ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysm.
Thank you, Stefan, very much. And don't forget that this issue will zap onto your iPad via the new BJS app. You can download the app for free from the Apple Store by searching under BJS. And that's all we have time for. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.